It can be hard to eat healthy during the holidays. With all the prepping and planning and cooking for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and other large family get-togethers, I know firsthand it can be easy to forget to prepare nutritious, healthy meals for yourself. This holiday season, you might be looking for nutritious, convenient meals to keep you energized on jam-packed days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service, can help you fuel up for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle while tackling all your holiday to-dos. Skip the stress of meal prepping over the holidays with Factor. Choose from 35-plus weekly flavor-packed, fresh, never-frozen meals that support a healthy lifestyle and meet your meal preferences, all delivered right to your door and ready to eat in 2 minutes. With Factor, you can rest assured you're making a sustainable choice. We offset 100% of our delivery emissions and source 100% renewable electricity for our production sites and offices. This November, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered right to your door. Ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/BA2022pod50 and use code BA2022pod50 to get 50% off. That's code BA2022pod50 at factormeals.com/BA2022pod50 to get 50% off. 2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way
back. Goal! Hey, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce here. Another Baseball America podcast winter meetings edition. As the winter meetings are rolling, I say this, I'm getting ready. I'm finishing this, heading to the airport to head to Nashville for the winter meetings. Before I even get there, we've already had a trade, which we will discuss. But most importantly, we have Jeff and JJ here. We're going to talk Rule 5 because it's Rule 5 week. Yeah. Rule 5 is on Wednesday. We're recording this on Monday. So we'll give you a little bit of Rule 5 preview. We'll also talk a little bit about the draft lottery. And then this is also going to be a tech in baseball podcast because I also did an interview with what I, again, when I find an interesting product, I like to share it, electrostimulation for athletes and elite athletes and how that's more than just for rehab. So it was an interview with the CEO of Catalyst, a company that's doing that, but also a strength and conditioning trainer, an expert, who is also going to be on that. So that's coming up later in the Baseball America podcast. But Jeff, as I was finishing my last Tigers report for the top 10 that goes to the magazine, into the magazine that goes to press sooner than I would like to admit last night, you were on Slack and several others were, and we were discussing Jerry DePoto was going to Jerry DePoto, which is the winter meetings kind of kicked off with a big trade from a standpoint of number of players, maybe not necessarily the biggest trade as far as impact that we may see during the winter meetings. But what struck you about the Mariners-Braves trade that sees Jared Kelenic and Marco Gonzalez and Evan White heading to Atlanta and Jackson Coar and Cole Phillips heading to Seattle? And let's also say, and a good bit of salary relief for the Mariners, I think would be the other way to put it.
Yeah, they take $19 million off their books. I don't think they're a better team with Marco Gonzalez. Evan White has not been in the picture since he signed that contract. And, you know, I think Jared Kelenic needed a change of scenery. There were some moments last year where it seemed like he had reached a league average contributor, at times maybe slightly better. But this is not a guy that's lived up to the prospect hype. I mean, at one point I thought this was the top prospect in baseball kind of coming out of the pandemic. So, I'll take the L on that one. But that being said, you know, I think that this is the kind of trade. I think people are going to find a winner or a loser, clearly say, oh, the Braves are the winner. They get Jared Kelenic. They're going to fix him and he's going to be, you know, an all-star. I don't think that's necessarily what's going to happen here. We got to see what DePoto is going to do. To me, this looks like a deal that's setting other things up. It clears a lot of salary space. They got rid of Eugenio Suarez. Obviously, they didn't offer, they non-tendered or didn't offer tender to Teoscar Hernandez. So there's a handful of players here who underperformed and are, if we really look at it, like not incredibly well-rounded players that they could potentially upgrade. I think it's interesting to see what they could do on their side. The Braves take a chance at an outfielder. I know Eddie Rosario is a free agent. Kelnick comes in and replaces him. That's not so bad. You know, I know Carlos has some thoughts on Cole Phillips. He hasn't pitched. I am not willing to completely write off a guy that was 97 to 100 miles an hour with a hammer breaking ball and had an injury as a prep. You know, a lot of people didn't know who Jesus Luzardo was after he got injured and then came in, and he's now a very good man.
No, I will.
It's the Mariners.
I will say that.
They're not dumb.
Right. That said, I get it. Like, this is a let's see what Seattle does next. If I'm a Seattle fan, though, today, I'm also a little bit bummed because if you're the Braves, I'll look at it from the Braves perspective, and they're getting Jared Kelenic in the perfect way to get Jared Kelenic, which is, okay, he is not as good as Julio Rodriguez. We have established that. That is now clear. That was something that was always kind of the friendly rivalry between those two. You had two top outfield prospects coming up. But he goes from a team where that was always going to be part of the story, and now you add to it that he also missed significant time last year on a team and making a playoff run because he, in a moment of frustration, broke a bone and missed time for that. So you have all that. And now he goes to a team where it's like, Jared Kelenic, we're not asking you to be a star. We're asking you to be the sixth best player in the lineup, seventh, because Matt Olson, Ronald Acuna, Ozzie Albies, Austin Riley, Michael Harris, those guys are all, you know, take your pick of their catchers. They're all higher up on the pecking order than Jared Kelenic. All they need Jared Kelenic to do is to match or try to better the production they got from Eddie Rosario and Kevin Pillar last year. And while if you are looking at Marco Gonzalez and hoping he'll be a star, I think you're probably asking too much. But the Braves are like, we just want durable, hopefully reliable back of the rotation innings. And I'm not sure he can give them that. But at the same time, they need options there because their biggest problem is not actually, crazy enough, the front of the rotation. Their problem is the back of the rotation. So and the other part that is fascinating in this is that Jackson Coar is almost becoming like a unit of measurement in trades now, which is that in trades where salaries are being shifted and all, Jackson Coar gets included. He's now been traded twice this offseason. He was traded to the Braves from the Royals. He's now been traded from the Braves to the Mariners. There may still, as bad as his big leagues have been so far, there's still a chance. This was at one point a very intriguing prospect. Maybe someone figures something out from him. But again, this is, as you said, more than anything, this is the moving of the money here is kind of the giant, not subtext. That may be the trade, and then the players that move are almost the subtext in this trade. But it is an interesting way to start what may be a very interesting week of the winter meetings. You know, we'll see if we get a Juan Soto trade. We'll see if we get a Shohei Ohtani signing. A Yamamoto signing. There's a lot of things that could happen. Not Yamamoto probably as much, but more likely at Ohtani. But there could be a lot of things that happen this week. But one thing, Jeff, that we do know that will happen, there will be a Rule 5 draft. There will be a Major League Rule 5 draft. And let's just be, there are probably no two people out there who enjoy this more than you and I. And you never fully know what you miss until it's gone. And not having a major league phase for the Rule 5 draft does mean that it's hard not to be excited to have the Rule 5 fever. Even if, let's just also be honest, the pickings are slim this year, aren't they?
Hmm. And we wrote about this last year. I think I had an article talking about, you know, how poor the Rule 5 draft was going to be in a year and how much they were impacted by the 2020 draft, because your college players predominantly are the players more often than not that are desirable Rule 5 picks, guys who might be on the line in a deeper system, in injuries, you know, something they fall by the wayside. Hudson Haskin, who's available this year, is kind of the perfect example, a guy who's really good in AA in 2022, had some draft pedigree, maybe hasn't set the world on fire, but can play a bunch of different positions. There aren't a lot of other guys like him that are available this year that were draft picks, you know, that just deeper system, whatever, 40-man roster crunch, injury, weird things happen. Not a lot of guys like that this year at all. There's a lot of repeat players. Some of the better players, digging through the numbers, JJ, are like three-time eligible hitters and pitchers. You know, once is fine, especially when they're like on the international side. They are eligible very young and often are only an A-ball, and it's not a prudent decision for a team to take those guys. Sorry, AJ Preller. But I think when you take a step back and you look at what's available, this might be a draft where there's five or six picks. It wouldn't shock me if it's the shortest Rule 5 ever. I mean, what's the least amount of
picks? No, not the ever, but the shortest Rule 5 in quite a while.
Okay. What was the last
ever?
You know the history much better than I do.
Ever, there were some years in the 70s where it got pretty grim.
If it's before I was born, it doesn't count.
The funny thing about all this is the Rule 5 draft, when we say this, like, and we say, oh, this is the busiest Rule 5. No, we'll never have the busiest Rule 5 ever, because back when it was just the draft, because there was no amateur draft yet, back when it was just the draft, there were years in the 50s and 60s where they kept changing the rules. And if you sign players, they were trying to limit signing bonuses. And so it was something where at one point, if you sign for over a certain amount of money, you were, unless you were on the major league roster, you were eligible the next year.
Wow.
Now, so, I mean, it was like tons of players getting taken and things like that. But yes, under the current format, it could be one of the modern rules. It could be one of the thinnest and shortest in quite a while. Even on the minor league phase, which, to be honest, a lot of times when you talk to officials with teams and all, they get really excited about the minor league phase, because there aren't the roster restrictions. The player, you just draft them, pay the little bit of money, and that player is now part of your team. And even there, there's less. Because the way I would put it is the Rule 5 draft has, if you think of it like a river, it's a river that has a confluence of multiple tributaries that feed into it, mm-hmm. right? And the international signings are one major tributary. And that one, I would say, we're still in a relatively fertile, that the flow of the water from that, there's not a drought coming from that side, because that's the 2019 class, largely, unless you were really a late signee. And that's fine. That was a normal year. The high school class, I do think, is always kind of a smaller form of a smaller tributary for the Rule 5, because the high school guys are a little, you know, are often not as polished as the college guys in the Rule 5. There are still some that succeed and all that, but it's less of what feeds the Rule 5. And then, as you said, the college class, that first year college class, is a big tributary that flows into this river, feeding the Rule 5 draft. And we have a 5-round draft, and some non-drafted free agents are the first time eligibles for that. And that just, to go from 40 rounds, which we had in 2019, to 5, it's like that wound through the Mojave, and it just dried out.
And the other thing too is there was no Rule 5 draft my first few months here. There was no Rule 5 draft in 2021. So there were players that ended up back in their organizations, maybe didn't get protected because they had to protect more players. They had draft picks and international
teams exactly.
that pushed their way to the majors and onto the active roster. And so then you had guys like Ryan Noti, you had all these other players. So the difference is really stark when you look at 2022 versus now, where, like I had told you last night, like for like a week before the Rule 5 draft, I had anxiety every night that I was missing good players that were going to get taken, which happened. This year, I don't have the same anxiety, because I'm like, I don't know, unless they're drafted another guy, you know, like the Cardinals pick from Mexico or somewhere like that, that's just off the radar and still on a contract. That's really the only guys that I'm probably going to miss in most of my research, because some of those is just, that's pretty hard to figure out, unless you have Unless BA had scouts down in Mexico working the Mexican league.
So I do want, we're obviously, if you check out, we have version 3.0 up right now. We're going to keep adding to it. At the same time, we're not slacking, everyone. We're not, with the fact that we're not going to have 100 names there this year is not because we've ceased caring, that we've ceased trying to do things on this. It's just because there aren't as many names this year. This was not a fertile crop, not because players forgot how to play in 2020, but because a 5-round draft means a lot of those players got pushed to 2021. Let's see what we see next year. But the other part with this is, so I do want to ask you though, with that, you mentioned Hudson Haskin. Is there a Jeff Ponce special? Last year, Ryan Noda was your guy.
Yeah.
Is there someone who you're like, who's your player in this year's class?
You know, I think Hudson Haskin.
Or do you have one?
I think I probably have a few. There's probably 5 or 6 different players that I would potentially go after. I think Hudson Haskin is really interesting. And one of the reasons I think Haskin is as interesting as he is I think there's a chance that if he had a full healthy season and produced in Norfolk, and there's no reason based on his history to think that he wouldn't at least be pretty good the previous season, over 109 games, full season at Double A Bowie. And I will hammer this until I'm blue in the face. I think the Eastern League is, if it's not the best competition in the minor leagues, it's one of the 2 or 3 best leagues in terms of talent, you know, game management. They actually play games. There's actually solid defensive play. There's good pitching. He hit 264, 367, 455, plays all 3 outfield positions, can certainly play center field. There's no questions about that. And he only played 33 games this year, hit 287, 394, 443. I think he meets the standards for defensive ability. He can run. There is some hit tool. There is some hit ability there. He's got some on-base ability. Not a huge power guy, but probably enough impact that it plays. I think there's definitely starting outfielders on some teams, but definitely, you know, 4th outfielders, bench guys that Haskin is better than. So I think he's a clear upgrade. And really, when we're looking at the Rule 5 draft, the question I've really come back to time and time again this year, would this guy be a clear upgrade from somebody who's on a bottom 5 to 10 roster? And I think Haskin could be an upgrade from some of those guys and has some upside as well. And just when you look at age, you look at his track record, I don't know if he's necessarily over his head. He just had a poorly timed injury. And, you know, how he recovers from that is obviously, you know, what the big question is there. But I do think he's pretty interesting. It was a hip injury. He had surgery for it. I think it was in May or June. So by the time the season starts, it's going to be about, 8 months or so. So, you know, hopefully he has a full off season. He's an interesting player to me. I think he's probably the guy, the more I come back to it, he's the one I'm most interested in. There's some other pitchers as well.
Okay, you get one. If you want more, you got to go to the Rule 5 preview. So, and I will say with that, the one thing that it's always difficult for us on this, and we lay this out, try to lay this out every year, we don't get the medicals. So, in Haskin's case, the biggest thing that might stand in his way is that a team says, we want to take Hudson Haskin, and their medical side says, we don't want to risk the workers' comp. And that gets turned down. Like, that's crazy, but that does happen, right? So, I've had years before where I'm like, why is this player not going to be taken? And I've had after the draft, someone come up to me and say, look, the reason he didn't is that the medical is such that teams are unwilling. Like, we talk about how low risk in some ways. I say you could really treat a Rule 5 pick, a Major League Rule 5 pick, as almost like a minor league infight of a veteran who doesn't have any options left. In that you bring him to camp. If it doesn't work out, no biggie. And if it does, great. It's a roster spot. There's a roster spot value. I should point out on that, unlike a minor league invite. But the medical is where sometimes teams will say, we're not willing to take that player because there could be insurance or health, health medical cost that we're not willing to take that risk. But I do think Haskin's a good one. My one guy is Blaine Crim, Rangers first baseman. You could say first base, third base. I'm just going to say first base. But again, what you said, I completely agree with what you said. If you're taking a Rule 5 pick because you hope that you bring them in, you stash them on their roster, you send them back to the minors, and they develop into something, that is like, I'm going to take my life savings and I'm putting it on 22 on the roulette wheel, because the track record of success with that is just so small. The successful Rule 5 picks year in, year out are players who that first year you have them may be their best year. We don't know if Akil Baddoo is ever going to have a year as good as his rookie year, but we can say that the Tigers got value out of Akil Baddoo because he was a productive player for the major league minimum in his rookie year. With Ryan Noda, Ryan Noda's already given value. Garrett Whitlock in year one. There's players like that. To have an Anthony Santander who's ended up being a productive long-term player, that's the dream. That's hard to get. But like a Blaine Crim, to go back to what you said, this is a guy who's got AAA time, who's been a consistent hitter throughout the minor leagues, may not be a star, but has a chance to be a productive big league player in 2024. That's what you're looking for, much more so than the player who's, well, there's a lot of tools here. He played an A-ball last year, and we hope that down the road he'll develop into something. To which I bring up, remember Elvis Luciano? I could do others, yeah. But Elvis Luciano, who the Blue Jays roster quirk, a contract quirk, meant that his deal had been renegotiated. Once that happens, you were then Rule 5 eligible. Royals left him off. Blue Jays took him, stashed him in their bullpen as a 19-year-old, and that was kind of probably, so far, that has been the highlight of Elvis Luciano's major league career. You look at a player like that and say, did you really get a whole lot of value out of that by carrying that player for a full year? That's what often happens with the stash-type player. But, Jeff, the other thing that we have in the BA realm coming up is we also have Tuesday night will be the draft lottery. And we have a piece up at baseballamerica.com. You can check it out right now, kind of looking at this, especially from the A's perspective, how the A's were the team that got screwed by the lottery last year because they were under the old format. They had to pick second, and they ended up picking sixth. And, oh, yeah, by the way, it was a draft that had five top players. If you pick fifth, you got Walker Jenkins. If you pick sixth, you had your choice. Again, there's going to be everyone else. Some of those guys are going to end up being very good players, but you wanted to pick the top five, not sixth in that draft. This year, the A's again have an equal chance as anybody of the top three teams of having the number one pick. But if you're one of those few diehard A's fans who have not basically cashed it in because of your revulsion over the move to Vegas, you do not want to see them show up as pick five or six. We explain that at baseballamerica.com. But the other part of this, Jeff, is like, I'll kind of tee you up on this, which is, but the flip side of that was the Twins were supposed to pick in the teens last year and they picked fifth. What does winning the lottery mean potentially for a team to have like a pick like that, where you go from a middle of the first round to a top of the first round?
I think it can save jobs and potentially make careers for some GMs and front office people. I mean, you know, like you take a look at last year. Okay. And I know you were in the room. You were the pool reporter. That's the correct term for the lottery.
I'm doing that. Looks like I'm doing that again this year.
Excellent.
So I'm looking forward to being sequestered.
So you are sequestered in there. You understand what's going on. And if I'm not mistaken, the Red Sox were really, really close to having the number one pick. And I wonder if Chaim Bloom, he might have gotten fired anyway. Chaim Bloom leaves San Diego with the number one pick and not Xander Bogaerts. Are things a little different from him? I don't know.
Very potentially.
Especially if he has a draft where he can get Skeens, Cruz, Wyatt Langford, whoever he preferred. Those are all players you can sell to your fan base and will get people excited. And then this is a team that needs a player that gets people excited and drives headlines. I honestly think that it could change the face of your franchise. The Oakland Athletics, with any of those three players, all of a sudden they are not the type of system that they have right now. They're not being rated the way that they're being rated right now because they have, you know, that, you know, sort of figurehead, their top guy, who's a real top guy. And this was a draft that impacts that. There's other years where you maybe don't even care if you get a top five pick because there might be a guy at six or seven you like better and you can get him a little bit cheaper and whatever. It might give you more money to play with down the board, which is obviously what's different about this versus other ones. But this was a year, I think, in 2023, this draft and the lottery in 22 really impacted the future of a lot of organizations. The Rangers get picking where they did.
100%.
And honestly, the best pick in the draft might have been three. You let other people make the decision and you take the guy that falls to you. No one's going to fault you for taking the third guy of the triumphant there at the top.
Tigers go three. They get Clark. Langford for the Rangers at four. Jenkins to the Twins at five. So that, again, that's all of those are picks.
Tigers took Clark at three. I keep on thinking it's Langford. How could anyone pass on Langford?
But I do think, though, to what you said, because of how the ping pong balls bounced, with one ping pong ball to go, the team that had the best chance of the first pick was the Boston Red Sox. And I do think that would have changed things, which seems crazy. And by the way, if you are not a fan of conspiracy theories and drafts and all that, I am kind of relieved that that didn't happen because that would have seemed absurd. It's like you do this for the first time. But the flip side of this is like last year was looked at as a stacked draft at this moment. Now, some of the names changed. Like at this time last year, if you're talking about the depth of this draft, you probably would have mentioned Chase Dollander's name before Paul Skeens, and those flipped, right? But you would have said Dylan Cruz and Wyatt Langford was very good, but maybe not considered on that same, you know, level, and then he was. So there was little tweaks. That said, this year's draft right now does look to be multiple notches below. We'll see how it plays out, but it is multiple notches below right now. And that's where my point, again, check it out, baseballamerica.com, how the A's could win by losing. If you pick one, you're thrilled to pick one. If you're the Tigers and you're, you know, like for instance, or the Pirates, who are the other two teams who could lose their pick next year, lottery pick next year, because you can only pick a revenue sharing recipient can only pick in the top at the lottery 2 years in a row, not a third. And those three teams, if they win a lottery pick this year, that flips it over that they will then not be eligible for next year's lottery. If you get one, hey, great. If you're a team that doesn't think that you're going to have a chance at a lottery pick next year, great. If you're the A's, you sure do not want to see that card flash up that says, with the sixth pick, the Oakland A's will select. You know, that's the nightmare scenario, I think, in many ways. It will be fun to check out. We got a lot more we'll have coming from Nashville, but also from everywhere because it's top 10 season. We're rolling out. We're already, as you listen to this, we've rounded second. We are heading into third, if you think of the bases as our analogy here.
I hope that our listeners know about the bases. I hope.
I would hope. But we're basically, the NL is all up. We're wrapping up the AL East tomorrow, Tuesday, as we record this on Monday. We're on to the AL Central. You're going to turn around. If you're a Baseball America subscriber, you're already going to have 300 updated reports. And by the way, we don't stop there. Then you're going to turn around in January and you're going to have 1,200 reports, 900 full scouting reports, another 300 that'll be up there as well. So it's all coming and it's all coming fast. And by the way, that's before we leave. The other part coming up is Jeff, if you're also a subscriber, what do we have coming on the Dynasty front for fantasy?
We are kicking off our Dynasty rankings tomorrow, actually. So during this week, we're going to put out a top 50 for Dynasty, and then we're going to roll into the positional rankings. We're going to have some supplemental content that follows up each ranking, kind of looking at some buys, some players that we're fading or avoids, and then some sleepers, etc., that sort of thing. And we're going to roll right through the position rankings through the end of December, doing catchers, first base, second base, and then we'll finish off the positions in January. And at the end of the month, you will have a full big old dynasty list. I don't have a number yet. We'll see how big the number is once we compile all of the names and everybody we feel needs to be ranked. But an appropriate list that will help you get through a full entire dynasty draft. And it will be updated throughout the offseason. So we're going to be, I think, finishing our dynasty rankings the same week within a couple of days of when we started them last year. So having that full off season with Dylan is great. And I think I'm really excited for what we're going to put out there, because there's not many guys on the dynasty side better than Dylan.
Main event winner, Dylan White. I will just drop that in there again, because that is amazing. So, well, that's kind of wrapping up our preview portion of this, but do stick around. After the break, we're going to be back with an interview with our tech in baseball portion of today's Baseball America podcast. Hey, everybody, JJ Cooper. As we often do here on Baseball America's podcast, we love to do kind of the tech in baseball podcast. I'll say I love to do the tech in baseball podcast because I am always looking. I'm always fascinated to see. I remember years ago looking at what are these strange blue cameras that I'm seeing at games. And it's like, oh, that's a high-speed camera that can record at rates that you haven't ever seen before. Okay, let's dive into that. Or what is it? Why are we now hearing of VAA and different things? And there's always new technology coming to sports, coming to baseball. And I always kind of want to learn more about it. And that's what we're doing here today, because kind of as part of this winter meetings preview, I'm kind of bringing this up partly because I had a meeting last year at the winter meetings where I first heard about this, which is Catalyst Fitness. And today we're going to talk about kind of a training device. And I want to make clear, this is not SponCon. This is something where I'm interested in it. Catalyst did send me a device to use for a while because I wanted to understand what it works like. But this is not an advertisement or anything like that. But I'm very happy to be joined today by Bjørn Waterman, who is the CEO of Catalyst, but also strength and conditioning expert who works with elite athletes, including Major League Baseball athletes, Joey Graney, who is also here to talk about it kind of from the end user perspective, but also the trainer perspective. So thank you both of you for joining here on the Baseball America Tech in Baseball podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, JJ.
So Bjørn, I do want to start with you because I could try to describe this. I will give a short layman's description, which is this is a device. This is a device that allows you to do workouts, but also do recovery with a suit that you put on that basically covers your arms, your torso, your legs, and then uses electricity, basically. I'm giving the true, but you could now explain it in a much better way than I. How would you describe, if someone's just listening to this and going, so what is a Catalyst device? What is a Catalyst device?
So Catalyst is a electromuscle stimulation suit. What we use is something that in physiotherapy has been used for 60, 70 years. We call it stim or e-stim or something like that. So after you got an injury, you need to rehabilitate your local muscle, like let's say your tore hamstring or your had a strain on your calf or something like that. You generally put these sticky pads on you and you basically rehabilitate your muscle. And the way it works is, so the human body is basically an electrical computer, if you think about it. So the brain is like, those are all electrical signals that go through between the different neurons. And the nervous system is an electrical pathway system. And these signals tell the muscles basically what to do. We also have two other nervous systems, which is like, for example, the sensory nervous system. So when we feel something, there's an electrical signal being sent from your fingers back to your brain, and that you can feel like heat, cold, pressure, like all these things. And then there's a third nervous system that we cannot control, which like, for example, controls your heart or your stomach and so on and so forth. But basically, the human body is an electrical computer. And we have been using certain signals to rehabilitate local muscles for about 60, 70 years. And about 20 years ago, some individuals thought, like, especially in Germany, where I'm originally from, why are we waiting until we get injured to use this? So why are we not using this on healthy muscles to like strengthen them or balance out the body from, you know, imbalances that we have in the body, or train really, really hard to reach muscle groups like, you know, the core, or like, you know, upper glutes, or like, you know, certain areas like around the shoulder that are really, really hard to train. And about 11, 12 years ago, I had a corporate job. I'm not from fitness. I'm a behavioral economist in tech. So I do human behavior at scale. And, you know, I was in tech. And because I had teams in 15 countries, I was running technology for Deutsche Telekom, technology innovation. And that's the parent company of T-Mobile. We have like 14 other T-Mobiles in other countries. So I was just basically 150 days a year on a plane. And my lower back totally blew up for the second time in my career. And I was in miserable pain and was on painkillers 20 days a month. And I was a runner. I was relatively in shape, but my lower back was really, really bad. And my physician said, like, hey, go to this personal training studio and you have to strengthen your core, because otherwise you're going to end up with a herniated disc, or we have to proceed surgery within a year or two. I was 35 years at that time, and that was not a good news. So I went to this place, and what I experienced was the first generation of full body electromuscle stimulation training. So people have basically put the tech that we used for rehab into a suit setup. And in this suit setup, the suit covers all your major muscle groups. So your arms, biceps, triceps, so, and then everything around your shoulder, like traps, and then pecs, abs, lower back, like erector spinae and like those muscles, and then glutes, hamstrings, quads. And while you're going through basic calisthenic motions like a squat, an air squat, or like a butterfly or a crunch, you know, everything in a standing position, the suit intensifies your muscle contractions. So it helps your muscles activate. And that does two things. So first of all, it intensifies the load on the muscle, but it also teaches your body like how it's supposed to feel. Because now you're like, oh, this is how this muscle is supposed to feel. And like, so it has, as to, it has a training effect, and it also has a teaching effect. So I did this, and I was like super skeptical. So first of all, like when my doctor told me about this, like it does this. And then, by the way, the workouts just last 20 minutes. And I was like, okay, now you lost me. This is too good to be true. Like, you know, this doesn't exist. And he said, no, please go. So I went, did my first class, and like 3 minutes into the experience, I was like, whoa, like I've never felt my body like this. Like, it's like everything is on, and like you're super aware. And I was just totally fascinated. And the 20 minutes like literally flew by. I was like, you're busy with doing things, and you're doing new exercises, and you're fighting against your own body. And I'm like, I was like sweating 5 minutes in, like dripping in front of me. And I was like, how on earth? Like, you know, how is this happening? And then 2 days later, I was sore as never in my life. Like I was like literally like I was like I spent 20 minutes standing basically and moving in the suit, and I have soreness as if I spent hours in the gym, literally hours in the gym. Absolutely fascinated. Gave my doctor a call, like, what the hell is up? Right? Does it feel this way? And he said, you know, you just broke down a lot of muscle fibers that you've never used, like that basically are like dormant, that are like, you know, not really functional. So you're really cleaning up your body, and you're really training your body. Cool. So I signed up. I did it every Monday at 6 p.m. And after 6 weeks, I woke up. So for context, I had horrible pain all the time, like I said. So when I got out of bed, I did this weird roll sideways and then like tried to get out because I couldn't sit up and stuff like that. And after 6 weeks, like one Sunday morning, I told my wife, I haven't taken a pill in a week and I can get out of bed properly. And I was like, how is that possible? I spent like six times 20 minutes in this thing. Miracle. Like I was absolutely fascinated by it. And then the other thing that I was fascinated by is that I was training. First of all, I was a person who didn't have time. I was traveling all the time. And now I found a thing where I can put a lot of training in a short amount of time. And a lot of us travel a ton. And, you know, having good workouts while you do this is really hard. And the other thing that I was fascinated by, who else all came? Like it was all people from all walks of life. There were like young people who were like, you know, semi-athletes, and then there were like elderly people in it. Like, so I was really, really fascinated by it. So the technology really allows you to activate your muscles very controlled, and the best aspect of that for me personally is it has no joint loading. So because my lower back is like, I have a L3-4-5 condition, so I can't lift. So I'm not really lifting heavy loads. So what I needed for my body stature, like, you know, I couldn't lift. Like, you know, those heavy loads, like, I just couldn't do. So I can now fully train my body at really hard intensities from a muscle strain perspective that I want. But I don't have the joint impact, and I don't have an injury risk because I'm not heavy loading, bad form doesn't get punished. And that's what I found with full body EMS. And I thought this has to become mass market and this has to become available. And I also found out that it didn't exist in the United States that summer, because I was in the US and with my wife, and we were four couples in LA, and we were sitting together, and the ladies started to talk about fitness, and I'm doing Zumba and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And, like, you know, this was like 2012. And then my wife said, like, I'm doing this, like, EMS thing where I have, like, you know, the suit on, and, like, you know, everything is a bit tighter and everything is a bit firmer, and, like, you know, I love it, and it's, like, short, and, like, no one is judging. And the other ladies were like, what are you talking about? And I just overheard the conversations, like, this doesn't exist in the US. So there's something that is absolutely working, that's injury risk free, that's fast, and, like, it doesn't exist. Like, how on earth? Did some research, and for context, why is it so late in the United States? The FDA started regulating powered muscle stimulators in 1999 because there were claims from very bad products in the 80s that you get rock hard abs from an app belt, like, that runs over, like, a watch battery for half a year. Like, how on earth is that supposed to go?
I remember a couple of those. Yeah seeing those on TV and in the back of magazines.
Yeah, exactly. So those were clearly gimmicks, but, you know, marketing people went very far with it and said, like, you know, hey, this is what you're going to get out of it. So it got regulated, but mostly from a claim perspective, and therefore it just arrived much later. So I decided, you know, do this, build a product around this, form a team, come to the US. And we did that. And that's the other part of the story. But so a very innovative technology where we're really changing the way how we work out. We're not just lifting anymore. We're not just running and throwing things and so on and so forth. We're, like, actually working with the muscle and packaged this in a really usable training product.
As truly a layperson, not an elite athlete in any way, the thing that did strike me when I started using it is my wife was a college athlete, and we would go to the gym every now and then together. And anytime I tried to use weights or anything like that, she just winced, because she's like, you're not doing it right. You're going to get hurt. And there is a relief when I was doing this. We're like, okay, I'm not going to do something where I throw out my back because I did a squat wrong or anything like that. But kind of with that, though, that we're not, you know, I want to kind of ask you, Joey, speaking of the elite athlete, as I said, which I am not one of, but this is where, you know, again, from the baseball perspective, one of the things that stands out to me about this is not, you know, how it can help a out of shape, you know, middle-aged person like me, but what this can mean for an elite athlete, a baseball player, not just baseball, obviously, but what it can mean for an elite athlete and how this works and how this can tie in for them. And that's obviously something that you have experienced. And if you would kind of just lay out a little bit of your background and all, and kind of how you found and how you use Catalyst.
Yeah. This technology is, it's an absolute game changer in the sports performance field. It's only going to catch on and grow throughout all the teams and throughout all the sports in at the professional level and at the youth amateur level. But if you look at, you know, athletics and in particular baseball, we play 162 games. It's a long season, and we got to keep these guys at the top of their game. So in addition to their normal training, their strength training, their mobility, their flexibility, their power training, this technology will be able to help us continue to make forward progress on those days that you won't necessarily want to load up a player and include a lot of joint stress. You can simply put on the suit and in 20 minutes have a full-blown workout and activate 90% of muscle fibers. So leave that athlete feeling fresh, feeling healthy to go out and to compete and to perform at a high level. And there's so many different modes with the device, with the suit, like you mentioned, with the recovery aspect, being able to put this on after a game and to just put into recovery mode and to be able to walk around in whatever clubhouse you're in and then be able to take that off, go home, have a good meal, get a good night's sleep. So the benefits are tremendous in building muscle, increasing strength, developing power, and being able to simply add it into a program that you're already doing. It's simply amazing.
Kind of when you said that with recovery, obviously that's a different goal, right? So like if you're at one, I got two questions. I'll ask the first one first and just remind me that I got another one to do. But when it comes to recovery, the goals of recovery are not to really work the muscle hard, right? It's more of to drive out, to clear out lactic acid and things like that after, you know, after a game. Like if you're a pitcher and you just threw 95 pitches, the goal for that post game is very different than the goal of, hey, it's a lift day, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like I said, you can put this suit on for 10, 20 minutes after the game and put it in that recovery mode. It's going to stimulate muscle fibers at a low intensity, get your heart rate up just a little bit, but it's all at a low intensity. And then you can, take the device off and then focus on the other forms of recovery, which are also important, like hydration, nutrition, sleep. So this is a great addition to any recovery routine in the sports performance field.
The other thing that struck me, the second question I had, which is I've kind of over the years been talking to relievers and the difficulty. There's been a kind of a struggle for relievers when they come to pro ball from the amateur level, because it's, as you said, whether it's 162, 140, whatever level of professional baseball it is, making that adjustment, because if you're on the college level, let's say as a reliever, you kind of know you've got your lift days built in, right? Because you know, if you're on a college team, you're playing Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So you have kind of a natural schedule that allows you to stay strong during the season. And I've talked to relievers who say one of the toughest adjustments they have to make is trying to figure out, when do I get my lifts in? What are my lift days? Because obviously as a reliever, just because you pitched yesterday doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to pitch today. But one of the things that strikes me with this is that this also kind of provides a little bit of a different way, again, a non-joint loading way to approach some of those things to try to keep your strength up in season, as opposed to, again, you don't really want to put in a good lift on a day that it, on the day that you pitch, or, but even if you've gone back to backs, I'm asking you, cause you're the expert, I'm not, do you want to put in a good lift on the next day after that? Or is that more of a, you need to be a recovery day at that point?
Yeah. Great question. And from a performance standpoint, we look at our athletes and the best thing that they can do physically is to be consistent in their training routine over the course of a season. This suit, this technology allows us to make forward progress and stay on that consistent path throughout the long season without the added stress on the joints, tendons, ligaments. So on those days that you're feeling down or you're throwing back to back or you've just played 20 days straight, if you're a position player, you can simply pop the suit on once a week, twice a week, get a solid workout in, stimulate these muscle fibers, low intensity, activate all those muscles, and it leaves you feeling refreshed, and ready to perform at the highest levels. So you're able to make forward progress over the course of a long season with this addition of this technology.
With elite athletes and with developing elite athletes, also you said when you get down to the, you know, when you, especially the high school, the youth level as well, is this an this and you know, when I as a strength, you know, again, as someone to work, like, is this a, okay, you're going to do lifts on these days, you're going to use Catalyst on these days, is it a yes and, or is it a replacement for, or how do you kind of, is it integrated with weight, you know, with a weight program, or how do you kind of use it?
that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would simply include this technology, include this suit into the program that you're already doing. So if they're working out twice a week, maybe use this midweek for kind of a deload. At the major league level with so many games, practice and taking batting practice each and every day, ground balls each and every day, traveling all around the country. You can use this suit once a week and then do your strength training once a week. So while you're on the road, same concept. You can travel with it. It's very easy to travel with. You pop it up wherever you are. You can do a full workout. You know, 2 or 3 days later, maybe you stress the body with traditional strength training to traditional plyometrics. You know, 3 days later, you hop in a suit again, so you can kind of rotate it through. Every coach is going to be a little bit different on how they utilize this technology in the suit. And that's what's great about it. There's no right or wrong way. You can use it twice a week, three times a week. You know, you can use it, for 2 weeks. This is what we're going to do for the next 2 weeks. We're going to do it twice a week and then do some traditional strength training. So you can kind of mix and match and blend the two together. And that's why I really like this technology.
So JJ, maybe two things here. So one thing I have to clarify, start with the bad news. The FDA has cleared us for adults. So we're basically 18 mm-hmm. and above. So that's
okay. 18 above,
currently where we are above. Like, so that's currently what it is. There's an argument to be made that not loading the bones for younger athletes has actually benefits because they're not fully set yet. And but again, we're not there yet. So we're gonna have to do more research and prove
that's a good clarification. I was unaware of that, so thank you for clarifying that.
Just wanted to for now. we can only do 18 plus. Obviously our goal is to help as many humans as possible, so down the road with more scientific insights, like we hope we can get maybe down to like 16 or maybe even 14, but as of now it's for adults only. What you guys have been describing is, so there are different training modes. Like, what does that mean? So the muscles are, first of all, built from like two different type of muscle fibers. So we have the slow twitch muscle fibers and the fast twitch muscle fibers. Generally, when we just like lift, when we just do like easy motions, we just use our slow twitch muscle fibers at real speeds, which are important, like with a lot of like pro athletes and very high loads, the fast twitch muscle fibers come in. The challenge with that is we need, like Joe, we need high loads or very fast speeds to like even train these. What we have with the Catalyst training system, and this is what Joey described as the power development, like, so we can modulate the signal that we're sending to the body so that we can trigger certain types of muscle fibers. So we can either say like we want to focus on the slow twitch muscle fibers, which is the strength mode. So like create general strength and endurance, like, hold something for a long period of time. Or we can say we go towards the power mode where the signal is going so fast that the fast twitch muscle fibers are reacting together with the slow twitch muscle fibers and don't have time to relax. So they're also building a full tetanus together with the slow twitch muscle fibers. And that is a huge benefit because we can train the fast twitch muscle fibers and can train speed and power without having high loads, without having high speeds. And as Joey said, like those are injury risk, exercises generally. And not traditionally you would load your joints and ligaments quite a bit in these exercises. So what Joey was describing is like we're able to do this consistently and increase even the performance throughout a season because we don't have to make this trade-off. We don't have to make this trade-off, okay, we want to train the muscle, but we can't load the joints. So this trade-off basically pretty much goes away. In the recovery mode that you guys were talking about earlier today is we are just creating a slow pumping sensation on the muscle, which is promoting blood flow, lymphatic flow, and so on and so forth. So basically get the right nutrients in and get the lactic acid and waste products out of the muscle. That's really what the different modes are doing. We also have a cardio mode. So if you want to increase your cardiovascular performance, this is just a partial muscle contraction. So you still have control over your muscles, but you have kind of like twitches around your body. But because you have twitches around your body and your full body around big muscle groups, there's a lot of ATP burn that's basically happening. So your cardiovascular system is just catching on. So also when you do want to do intense cardio training, but you don't want to go for a run because you want to don't load your knees or don't want to go on a bike like too heavy, you can do like, you know, light bikes and whatsoever. And then I do this, for example, with an assault bike, and then superimpose the Catalyst suit on top of it. So it's you can literally take it how far you want without completely loading your joints and ligaments, but still have a high cardiovascular load. So if you really want to do intervals and VO2 max training and so on and so forth, you can totally do this. So it is like, as Joey described, like an additional tool set for the trainer, so they can like add this on. And last but not least, like one additional point I wanted to make is the mental load is also relatively low. So when you're doing bench presses, you need to focus, you need to get the right form, you need to mentally be in the muscle to really get a good bench press. Here we're not benching anything, you don't have to stabilize anything. Like, you know, it's mentally much easier to do so. So what I got, you know, what some athletes and, you know, high professionals like told me, like on days where they're mentally exhausted, the only task I have is to get into the suit. And then I hit go and then I just basically follow along and get carried through the exercise. So even if I'm not mentally there and fully in the muscle and fully controlled, I still get a really good workout. Which like for, you know, those days when I'm mentally, I really don't want to do something, like, okay, the only task is take it to your hotel room or like hotel gym, like get it on and do it. And that's another benefit. And what we see with athletes and non-athletes is it makes you just skip one thing less. Like, you know, it's like instead of like, no, not today. Or like, you know, do it half the way. It's like you can still totally do that.
And also, as you said, the thing that does jump out with it also is you're doing 20 minutes and you hear that and you go, well, that can't be. And then at the end of the 20 minutes, you realize how much you're dripping. Mm-hmm. and how much, even though it's been 20 minutes, it's something where you're like, okay. And then you wake up the next day and go, oh, that really, I definitely feel that. But I did want to ask kind of like, Bjorn, also kind of to explain a little further. Someone hears this and they hear electrostimulation. So I'll give the partial description. And I'll kind of hand it off to you, which is, so this suit has all these basically pads inside of it that you wet so that you have a good contact.
Yes.
And then you have kind of this under this basically I would describe as underwear that you wear under it, that you then zip the suit up, and you have pads that also go on your arm so that you kind of have those. And then there's a pack. There's this pluggable, rechargeable pack that you just basically plug into a standard cell phone charger, plug it in, and then it's charged. And then you kind of tuck that on your side. But I think also when someone hears this, they may go, okay, then does it feel like that I'm just being like that I've stuck my hand in a electrical socket? Or how would you describe, which I would say that the answer is no, but you definitely also do know that something is going on.
Yeah.
But how would you describe it, since you're the one who's been using it the longest?
Yeah. So, I mean, electricity comes in a million different shapes and forms, right? So, it's not the socket and it's not the car battery. By the way, the car battery is much worse than the socket, right? So don't
use
the car battery, like, you know, don't really do that. So it's a fraction of that. So we're talking like milliamps, like we're talking like really, really low currents here, that are very similar to what your body is basically already using. So again, like how do you use this? So we have a two-piece suit, which is a base layer, kind of like an underwear, and then there's the, you know, tech suit, so to say, on top of that. And the reason why we built this in this two-piece way is for multiple reasons. The first one is, when you're traveling with a suit and you're using this on multiple days on a travel, the base layer, like you sweat into that one, like, you know, you just get really, you really sweat into this. Like the thing is drenched afterwards, like, you know, absolutely. And you want to be able to change that out. So the suit comes with two base layers, and like people who use it a lot could buy four. So you basically like have stuff that you exchange out. The other thing that our multi-piece suit, and you described, like, so we have a vest, we have a shorts section, and then we have like arm straps. What that allows us to do is humans come in very different shapes and forms, shapes and sizes. So we can literally fit anybody. And that is because we basically take your measurements and then we build your suit together. The Impulse Pack is a massively miniaturized version of these big consoles that, you know, trainers used to use or like still use. And that basically controls all the different areas of your body separately. So there's 26 pads on the inside of the suit, and each of these two always work together. So two on the right pack, two on the left pack, two on the right arm, two on the left arm, and so on and so forth. And during the workout, depending on what you're working on and what you're doing, these fire in different sequences at different signals. So the way it feels is depends on the workout mode. So like I said, so starting with a recovery, it feels like a pumping, like, you know, your body is like pumping once a second. And then it's more like, you know, like a tremor, like, you know, on the cardio mode. And on the other modes, it's more like a strong grip, or like it's like a distance. Joey, how would you describe it?
Yeah, on that, it's like a big impulse, so to speak, on that mode.
Yeah. It's kind of like your body's like firming up. You're like, you're really there. So the body's all, the suit is also very tight. It has to be like worn really tight against the body so that you don't lose contact. It's like, it's, I have this analogy that I use very often. So like both of you guys have done it. So for us, the conversation is much easier as if someone who's never done this before. And by the way, like the moment we put any athletes, doesn't mean what sport whatsoever, like any people who have a good connection with their body, they get into this 10 seconds in, 30 seconds in, they're like, I get it. If you have people that are untrained, they're like, what is this? Why is this? Why is my arm moving? Why is this? That's a different, like different levels. But people who have contact to their body, they're like, oh, do this. Like it's so interesting, like, you know, how that is, because athletes already have a good understanding of their body and have a good body-mind connection or muscle-mind connection. So the analogy is chocolate. So if none of you guys ever had chocolate, and I would explain it to you, like, you know, it's this dark thing. It comes in form of butter, and it could be very dark and bitter, or it could be quite sweet, and I can make like a drink out of it. I can put it on ice cream, or I can put like cayenne pepper on it, and then I can eat it in hot. What are you talking about, right? So it's like, if you never had chocolate, it's a really, really hard concept. So what I would say is, it feels like a, like you're kind of like under pressure, like, or underwater, or like, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, everything is very tense and it's very, you know, active. And when I do a biceps curl, for example, my biceps works against my triceps. So that's really where the resistance is coming from, because all your body is firing. So now you have an eccentric motion on the triceps and a concentric motion on the biceps, which is the positives and the negatives that we actually want. So why are you doing like just this motion? You're basically doing two exercises in one. You're doing the triceps exercise and the biceps exercise, and you're doing it with positives and negatives. So it is a really, yeah, it is an intense feeling in a positive way, because you really connect with your body. I think that's
especially because you also you're running this off an iPad.
Yes.
And you also can ramp what level you're doing. So you can do that. Obviously, you could say, okay, I want to focus more on arms versus more on legs versus more on whatever. And
very good point. We haven't really explained that yet, right? So the whole system is controlled by an iOS app that either runs on your iPad or your iPhone. And this has there's two functions of that. The one is, as you described, the individual adjustments of how your suit is working. So everybody has his own profile, And people say, I want a little bit more on the glutes and I want less on the hamstrings and I want more on the arms and less on the abs and so on and so forth. So you're creating, like, think of an old sound system that had this equalizer, like, you know, in bass and highs and mids and whatsoever. So you're basically doing the same thing for your body. So you're basically building your equalizer profile for your body. And then the app comes and basically you have two opportunities to use the system. The one is, we have hundreds of workouts for different goals, rotational speed, racket sports, ACL injury prevention, like, you know, lower body, upper body, like yoga stretching, recovery. Like, we have like a huge variety of different workouts. And in these workouts, a trainer takes you through exercises that you're supposed to do, but they are also controlling partially the profile of the workout with your suit. So when the trainer on the screen is saying, like, hey, we take it up a notch, your suit is reacting. It's a very, very immersive experience because the trainers then control the profile of the intensities personalized to you based on your equalizer settings. The other mode is basically like a freestyle mode where the pulses are coming in, there's a certain ramp, and you can combine it with whatever you're doing. Like, you know, if you're doing like your own workouts, your own exercises, if you get on your assault bike or like, you know, whatever you want to control it with, we have freestyle modes for like all the different training aspects. And that's basically how the iPad is controlling. The iPad is kind of like the brain, and then the impulse pack is the heart of the experience, so to say. So the impulse pack makes this all fire and, like, you know, takes the signals from the iPad and then makes this all work. It also measures about 1,000 times a second, like, you know, how the connection is with your body, and constantly adjusts that, which is very important for a consistent experience. But the iPad is controlling it, and you always have the opportunity to say, I want more here and less there, and so on and so forth. Which, an additional aspect, let's say someone has an injury, and they say, let's say we have a hamstring injury, and I still want to stay, you know, training and stay active. What we can do is you basically like train all muscle groups, but you mute or reduce the intensity on your hamstrings. So now you can, like, you know, stay training, but, you know, just take it out for a certain muscle group, and then over time, you know, bring it back in as you're healing.
Kind of along those lines, Joey, when you're talking about, you know, with elite athletes and all that, is it more like... is it the workouts, or is it more like, okay, designing a, you know, with the freestyle component of it that allows kind of to almost kind of invent things as far as how we're going to use it?
Yeah. I would use the combination of both of them. You know, it frees up that coach to run the athlete through a various variety of different exercises. Or you can simply, just like some of our athletes, use other pieces of equipment that have some, you know, technology built in, such as like a Peloton. Same thing, you can set up the app in, say, the weight room or the training room, and you can have their athlete go ahead and do that program while you're working with other athletes around, and then kind of keep your eye on the one athlete using the suit and monitor that. And then when they're finished, you can help them, take everything off and hang it up to dry, and so to speak with that. One thing too, that I found very helpful in enhancing performances is, just like you mentioned earlier, the days where you don't feel like training, you put the suit on, you take the suit off, and you feel incredible. You feel amazing. Those days you go perform an actual workout right after being in the suit, you know, you can increase your strength, increase power during those days. And then also on the other side, you putting the suit on, say in recovery mode or a lower intensity mode prior to an athletic event, should be able to go out and enhance the performance. So you can put it on, and I can see players putting this on, walking around the clubhouse, listening to their music, going through their stretching and their mobility exercises prior to an elite game or elite competition, taking the suit off, putting their uniform on, and then going out to the field and playing. And you just feel incredible. After being in the suit. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah,
you're waking up the nervous system. You're waking up all your muscles. Like, you're like, hey, here we go. Here we are. Like, it's literally an ideal warm up. It's yeah. We had this with some athletes, like, that were very early with us 2 years ago when we basically were able to ship the product for the first time. And this was in soccer. And they literally said, like, you know, hey, I put this on 10 minutes before, like, do it very light, do like some movements, like, you know, get rate of motion in, get really the blood flowing. And then, you know, I put my cleats on and get on the field. And it's like, killer. It was like late in the career individuals thinking, like, after a hamstring injury was one, for example, saying, like, this is over. And then he ended up playing every minute of the season. So it's just like, you know, first of all, like that, but then also like not getting into an injury again, like so because you're warm, like your muscles are there, like, you know, you're really there. Yeah. And as Joey said, like the low mental load, you can just focus on something else and still you're like feeling like really, really good.
Again, that's what jumps out about it. It was a fascinating topic to me because I had never really, I had heard of eSTEM. I had heard of the fact of like, okay, this player is trying to recover from this injury, and so they're getting some eSTEM. But I had not heard about it being here in the States. I had not heard about it in something in a different way, in a way that is a proactive, not a reactive way of using electrical stimulation. I do want to ask both of you guys, as I often do on these, is there anything we didn't cover? It's like, hey, you missed out, like that we should be covering this. I'll get start with you, Bjorn. You know, is there something that we didn't cover, or good I did question. Want to get the what it felt like, because I do think that that's something that if you're hearing about this for the first time, that is, and I don't have a great way to describe it other than when you're done, the way I would also describe it is you know, you feel that those muscles have been very much activated, energized
100%
in a way that's it's hard to fully
you feel wobbly. I feel like wobbly after this, like, you know, I really have the post-workout endorphin rush that I would have if I'm in the gym, like I really have that. And like you feel accomplished. That's really an interesting thing, like, you know, you fight through this thing, and there's some swearing involved sometimes, like, you know, towards the later you know, stages of this. And yeah, the other thing that I really, really love as a heavy travel person, like, you know, I have a, I don't know, 120, 130, maybe even more, probably, nights in hotels a year. Like, I have 100 flights a year, like stuff like that. So like on this heavy travel schedule, just like packing this into your carry-on, taking it out of it, taking it out in the hotel room, just getting something done and take a shower and go. It's just so amazing. Like, you know, for someone who's really on a tight schedule and mentally busy with something else, I'm absolutely excited about this. And you can like keep training your muscles without joint issues, right? That's like, for me, it's like, I have like, had a knee surgery. I have a lower back issue, but I'm in the best shape of my life.
But anything else we didn't cover, Joey, as far as from the training component?
No, on my side, I mean, just emphasizing, you know, the various forms that you can use this technology, this suit, you know, in the recovery setting, from a performance standpoint, you know, you can use it for, you know, training, either strength training, building muscle, developing power, and then using it as a primer, or like a pre-competition type of activation. So there's so many different modes you can use this, and the creativity is exceptional. You can use it, you can do the workouts that they have already on the app, or you can customize your own, you know, the cardio setting. So there's so much involved. Yeah, it's a game changer.
But well, thank you both for joining me. That is Bjorn Wolterman and Joey Greeny, who, as we talk about here about Catalyst. So thank you for joining us here on the Baseball America Tech in Baseball portion of the Baseball America podcast.
Wonderful.